Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Beyond the To-Do List. I'm your host, Eric Fisher. This is the show where we talk to the people behind the productivity. This week, I'm talking with Nick Snap. Sorry, I guess that's more of a cracking of a whip. Anyway, Nick Snap of the Make It Snappy Productivity Show. Nick and I met at Podcast Movement in Chicago, July 2016, and he's doing some amazing stuff when it comes to productivity. So if you're looking for yet another productivity podcast to check out, you must check out the Make It Snappy Productivity Show. In this episode, Nick and I talk about hacking corporate. What does that mean? Well, we'll get into that, but as a teaser, it's about becoming more productive, effective, efficient, etc. in your day job at an organization. But we also talk about the opposite of that, or I should say at least the opposite of working in an organization. You're still going to become productive, effective, efficient, and all those things, but working not at an organization, working for you or a remote team, working at home. So it's about hacking corporate and hacking homeworking this episode. Before we get into that, I want to say thank you to AWeber for supporting this episode of Beyond the To-Do List. AWeber is a leading email marketing platform for growing businesses and entrepreneurs. They have an awesome resource landing page that you can get to by going to aweber.com/to-do. Go there and grab the tools that will make you a better digital marketer, even if you are not a digital marketer. This is set up for you to go and grab free videos, downloadable checklists that will get you up to speed on some of the most basic marketing tactics. Even if you are a seasoned marketer, I am betting there are things that you have not yet done yourself before. For example, creating your first online course, or your first YouTube video, or your first podcast episode, or your first Facebook ad. Any and all of these things are there. aweber.com/to-do. Go grab these free videos, the downloadable checklists. Get started on that next thing that you need to do to become a better digital marketer for whatever it is you are doing online with your digital presence. That link again is aweber.com/to-do. aweber.com/to-do. Thanks again to AWeber for supporting this episode of Beyond the To-Do List. Enjoy this conversation with Nick Snap. Well, this week it is my privilege to welcome to the show Nick Snap. Thank you, Nick, for being here.
I'm grateful to be here, man. It's awesome.
So we met in Chicago. That was a fun time. We were at Podcast Movement. And lo and behold, another productivity podcaster.
Indeed. Yeah.
There's not that many of us, but there are some really awesome. Actually, I'm really glad that there are some great productivity podcasts out there. And the thing is I had not heard of you at all. And so I was like, oh, who's this guy? And then I started to get a little bit of a picture for where you came from. So let's go into that. Hmm. So you were. I guess you still technically are, though you don't practice it per se. You were and are an engineer, and I guess you were and are a project manager.
That's right. That's right. So, yeah, it's kind of, yeah. When do you let go of those ties? I guess once you're an engineer, always an engineer, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, you still have those skills, so it's not like you cease to be, even though you don't carry that quote unquote label. In your current career, you're still an engineer, and you still engineer some stuff, and you're still a project manager because you product manage your life and your business. So
that's absolutely right. Yeah, you can't change the way that you think about these sort of things. I'm wired that way now.
So definitely. But where were you? Like, you were entrenched. Like, you were in the day job. You were in corporate.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, I was putting in some serious hours in corporate. I did for 14 years working as an engineer project manager. I spent time working for Lockheed Martin right out of school, worked in the nuclear industry, worked with the Navy, the nuclear Navy. And I went over to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. I did some work to support them for a while. And then most recently I went in the phosphate industry, and I spent about 18 years there doing capital project management, just taking those crazy nebulous projects that people have these wild ideas and making them real. And they're big ones too. Some of them were $100 million. So I had a lot of that, the five phases of the project life cycle, five phases of the project, you know, initiation, planning, execution, monitoring and controlling. That's only four. I feel like I'm missing one already. closing, obviously, the last one's closing. So yeah, the five phases of the project lifecycle, put on the spot, trying to spit them out. It's always fun. And I try to incorporate those skills into what I'm doing now in this productivity space.
Nice. So I assume that's kind of where you got that inkling, or you got your toes wet, your feet wet in mm-hmm. the world of productivity, because project management and productivity kind of go hand in hand in a lot of ways. People don't always acknowledge that. I've had people, I had Cesar Abid, I don't know if you're aware of who he is. He's
He's
been on. Yeah, he came on, talked about his book about a year ago now. Jeez. And project management for you. And I've always seen it that way. It's like project management. Well, managing a project is managing a task list or a timeline for a goal, a project, etc. That's what productivity, it's part of productivity. I wouldn't say that's all of productivity, obviously, hence the title of the show, Beyond the To-Do
List. That's right.
There's so much more to productivity than just a to-do list.
So much more.
So, but that's, I assume, where you got in to productivity and really started to, in other words, hone your skills.
That's right. That, and then I really started getting fascinated by Lean Six Sigma. So I got certified, got the green belt thing going on, and just digging into the processes. I was always in manufacturing phosphate. You mine the rock out of the ground, and then you turn it into fertilizer, the industry that I was in. So there's all kinds of conveyor belts and massive tanks and concrete structural jobs. There's just all kinds of projects out there and processes to take widget A all the way to from point A all the way to point Z, and ways to improve that process along the way. So I take that process improvement mindset, which when you're trying to improve something, that in and of itself is a project, and then apply that to personal effectiveness. So right. When I first started, Eric, I was going to go into, and I did, went into companies to do these Lean Six Sigma studies. 3 days after I quit, I was fortunate enough to receive work over in Los Angeles. So I took a plane to Los Angeles 3 days after I quit, and I worked for a credit card manufacturing company to help them get their numbers up. I did a study. I was like a consultant of a consultant. Great work, had a great time. And that's when I realized, though, doing that, I took a look at my life 10 years down the road. I was like, man, this is not what I signed up for, to be away from my family for like 2-4 weeks at a time. It's just not, it's not my thing. I got into this entrepreneurship to have the opposite happen, spend more time at home. And that's when I realized that I had to figure something else out. And my own coach, my own process, productivity, the characteristics and everything that comes along with it was what I've been all about throughout all my years in corporate. And that's the space that I chose to start planting some roots in.
Yeah. Well, so I've heard you talk with our mutual friend, Mike Vardy, all about this right? term hacking corporate. And you've done that, except mm-hmm. I think some people, when they hear that, they think, oh, that means that you got so good at your job that they couldn't keep you. You became unemployable. But I hear that, and I also think the flip side, where you got so good at hacking it and getting so good at being efficient and effective in the position you were in that they had to move you up. And I think that's the distinction there, is there's you hack corporate for one of two reasons, and maybe both, is to move up or to move out.
That's right. And mine was, I got the entrepreneurial bug, got the seizure, as Michael Gerber calls it, from the E-Myth. I think in 2011, I wrestled with this idea for 4 years, because I had family and all the things that we wrestle with when we're trying to figure out what do we want to do with our lives. I wrestled with it for about 4 years and started getting just caring less and less about the perception of what the higher ups thought. And I was surprised to realize that the less I cared about perception, the better progress reviews and performance ratings I was getting, the more I was getting done, the more deliberate I was with my time while working in the corporate world, the better off everybody was, because I was in a better mood. I was able to work in an environment that worked best for myself and supported the company best, because I was getting more done with them. So I came up with this idea of hacking corporate, being it's not just about me, although that was the driver. Like, I don't care anymore. I'm just going to do what I need to do to get this done effectively so I can spend more time at home, versus being sucked into this job that down in the future, I'm not really sure where this is going to go. I want to be an entrepreneur. And taking that idea and transforming it into a mutually beneficial situation for everybody. So there's so many different things. And if you've been in the corporate world, Eric, which you're I know you have like the dream job and everything's perfect for where you're at, but you've seen, I'm sure you've seen that sense of politics and office culture that just gets really unnecessary. And there's a lot of waste. And being the Lean Six Sigma guy, we look for defects and waste. So seeing all the different things that people are doing that isn't adding value to the company, how can you lead by example and cut that stuff out at the risk, I guess, of at the risk of your reputation? But the flip, the alternative happened, the opposite happened to me and people that I know who exercise this, they actually end up better off in the long run if they communicate the value effectively to the people that are watching.
So I've been in both scenarios as well. I've hacked corporate when I was in the last time I was in a formal brick and mortar organization. I hacked corporate to move up. I then also eventually moved out. I think you and I could have a pretty cool conversation here if we went back and forth and maybe shared some stories, some best tips, tricks, whatever practices for how to hack corporate to move up, because a lot of people like their jobs where they are right now. But then also there's this other group of people that we talk to that listen to that are also avid podcast listeners who want to move out or already have, and they want to learn how to hack their own singular corporate silo of just themselves or working remotely.
That's right. Yeah. So, creating a work environment that you enjoy that works for you and your family.
Yeah. So let's start with working our way up, or, you know, to be honest, it doesn't even have to be to work your way up. You could literally just like the job that you are in. You show up, you know, it's a 9-to-5 job. You like the security of that. You like going there, doing it there, leaving it there, and going home. And I really actually enjoyed that aspect of it. However, the one, so I can tell a semi embarrassing story slash bragging story in some senses for me. I was working in a, let's call it a sales scenario where I was getting so good. I needed to be there to be a warm body to receive phone calls. This was just prior to, like, we didn't have laptops, so we couldn't leave our cubicles. We were in cubicles. But they were decently private cubicles, and we had like these big Dell desktop, you know, computers, and we couldn't leave. We couldn't like go to a coffee house and get the work done there as well. It was all about being that person who was there to receive the call in case it was one of our sales clients. And so you would email the new leads. You would call the new leads. You would email old leads and call old leads. And I had gotten that down to such a system where once a week I'd do this wide swath mail merge thing to all my old stuff, all my old leads. Every morning I'd get in there at about 8 and I would, by about 9, be done with pretty much the workload that everybody else in the rest of the office would do for the day.
Oh, dude, don't you love when systems work like that? That's such a cool feeling.
So, it was all systematized. It was just a matter of looking at what was there, who, you know, had somebody gotten me a piece of paperwork from the day before? Like, I was all set up and ready to go and waiting for the mail to come in for the day. And I just, here's the part where it's kind of embarrassing for me. I would get that done, and I would even do a checkup and a repeat and like be literally there with my email open waiting for something to come in and then immediately respond to it and just keep knocking it out throughout the day. I was like, nope, volleyball's back in your court. Boom. And wait for the mail.
We get in the email. We get in the email thing.
And then I'd go back to – I'd go to lunch. I'd come back. This is where I originally had started podcasting, because that's why my friend and I, we worked in the same office. We were both so good at this. We'd go and we'd run home to his place, heat up a pizza, eat it, and record a comedy podcast back in, you know, 07.
That's awesome.
and it was fun. And anyway, here's the thing. I wasted so much time and justified it because I had worked so hard. that I was sitting there just, you know, I was sitting there on Twitter and on Facebook and reading articles and looking up crazy random stuff instead of, you know, maybe cracking a book and learning something or blogging or writing even. Like I wasted that time. And because I was covered, like if anybody were to take a closer look and say, you know, how, you know, and here's the one other thing that justified me was the fact that, say a good number, say my number was for the year making 300 sales. Okay. The next runner up, 150.
And you were doing it in an hour?
So anyway, dude, I was getting all that done. So, and that was, this was after about a year plus of me like practicing and getting, honing it, getting it down, all of that. And then the person behind me getting 150 and then varying degrees below that, and we're all getting paid the same. So suddenly I'm so disillusioned. I'm just like, what do I do? I don't know what I'm doing. And so I actually played some computer games on my computer and stuff like that. And just was like, what? I'm done.
Trying to fill it. Yeah.
Got my stuff done. And that, so I'm not proud of this. And at the same time, I am very proud of that.
I can see that now,
you know? And okay. So that's my story. Tips and tricks that as far as that goes, like I analyzed the system and said, what has to be done daily? What has to be done weekly? And what's the right interval? What's the interval that everybody else is doing it at? And how can I do it like one or two more than them just to be ahead of them and on the safe side? And how fast can that get done and still be done properly?
You know, and creating that buffer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So well, that's my story.
That's a great story, man. I got into hacking corporate out of necessity. I got into productivity out of necessity because I was almost like out of rebellion because I was going to one site and I was already commuting about an hour and I was doing project management work in detail in the engineering department. And I got moved to another site that was another half an hour to the east. And the traffic for that other commute was horrible. So even though it was only half an hour, there'd be times, I think my longest commute was like 2 hours, 15 minutes or something ridiculous. And it just really, really bogged me down. And the fact that I didn't want to get transferred to that site in the first place, I had a chip on my shoulder. So I'm like, no, I am not putting one extra minute into this job than I did when I was at the other site. So I need to become a machine. And that's what I did. Very, very similar thing. I understood. And my job as a project manager, there's things coming at you from just 100 different angles. You never really know what's going to come up. But it's all the extra, all the minutia that comes up, all the corporate nonsense, the people dropping by your office to like hang out there and talk to you about whatever it is they want to talk about. It's the email. It's that stuff that was such low-hanging fruit for me and so obvious that I was able to develop those systems and processes to take that out of my life. I remember when I went to – so at the very end, when I really got to like my peak of my hacking corporate career, if you want to call it that, I got transferred from – I actually took a job as a promotion to go from the engineering group to the supply chain group. And being the only engineer in a supply chain department, I thought of things a lot differently. And I took over the job from a great guy. But I remember when I got there, they were showing me all the reports that they were putting out on the supply chain every week. And there was 14 reports that were going out every week. I got it down to 2 in about 3 weeks. And one of the easiest things that I did, Eric, but I was like, to stop sending a couple of them. Like, this doesn't make much sense to me. Let me just see if anybody cares. Mm-hmm. And about 75, 80% of those reports, nobody cared. I mean, I might get an email like 6 months later. Hey, whatever happened to that? Oh, what kind of information do you need? You know, asking critical questions and what other ways can I get that to you? So that was one of like the big things. It's just like, stop doing this legacy stuff that everybody's doing because they say it, that it needs to be done and challenge it. Find these subtle ways to challenge it. I think, but out of like from a big picture perspective, if you're hacking corporate, whether you're doing it to move up or you're doing it to move out, it can't be about you. You really can't, because you need to figure out how to add the highest value to your company first. Mm-hmm. And then if you want the freedom and autonomy and everything that we're all looking for in life, then how can you do it with freedom second? So it's like it's planting seeds. You need to be a very, very high performer like you were in your position before you can start putting yourself out there to start kind of figuring out ways to get outside of your cubicle and do things differently. So planting seeds along the way. I mean, I remember when one of the key things overall when you're looking at hacking corporate is just to start listening to your colleagues and your senior directors and vice presidents and the CEO and all that, and just really understand what's adding the most value to the company. You know, like, is it what your supervisor is telling you, or is it deeper than that? Is there something that they're telling you, or is there something that they really care about that's going to make you, is going to excel your career, it's going to add more value? And learning which activities are perceived as unnecessary, because there's a lot of stuff that people are doing that have just a really bad reputation. People don't know why people are in a certain career. Like, if you've ever been in a large office, there's these strange positions that are really, really difficult to explain. Those are the ones that nobody understands. They have kind of a bad rep. I don't want to call anybody out like specifically, but there's like a lot of data management kind of positions, or like record keeping sort of roles that I remember that were just out there, and nobody really understood why, like, they were created.
People give me these papers and I file them away. And right. Like office space is like, no, I don't deal directly with the sales. Like, I'm the guy who takes the files from I forget who. There's this whole scenario where the Bobs come in and they're talking to the guys, and the one guy's
so
like, well, because the engineers can't talk to the sales team, and the sales team can't talk to the engineers. They need me as the middleman. And it's and I think, and so here's the thing that speaks to the culture, I think. And I think that's the thing. That's the thing that I think a lot of times, if you're going to get anywhere with hacking, whatever kind of corporate job you have, you have to, one, figure out, really be a real good study of what the culture is. One, what the stated culture is, but two, what the unstated culture is.
Boom. Yeah, you hit it on the head. Absolutely. And the one thing that I used to do from a culture perspective is that I remember going on like the reputation for, it was one of the floors, it was a 4-story building, and it was the one particular floor where there's one manager there that as soon as this person left her office, like 50% of the people that were sitting in their cubicles, 5 minutes later, they got up and left because of that perception thing.
Yeah.
Well, I saw that out of the get-go, and having my mindset where I really didn't care where this was going. I remember when I interviewed Eric, for this position, he asked me like what my 5-year plan was. And I said, well, look, there's a couple different routes. I'm really excited about the potential to become an entrepreneur. I am. And I don't know if that's going to be in 5 years. I don't know if it's going to be in 3 years or what. I just don't know. I got to see that thing through. But what I'm going to tell you is that I will give you the best 2 years that anybody's ever given you in this role. Hmm. I will give you 2 years. And I committed to that. And so they knew in the interview, man, that I wasn't necessarily the person that they're going to be investing in long term. Now, granted, they started, you know, putting those sort of things together with succession planning, and all the while I didn't care about it. But I knew planting that seed up front that I can get away with a little bit more than somebody else would, because I was upfront and honest and I communicated about it. So one thing that used to happen, like, I would come into the office, I'd try to work as I became familiar with the processes and the people. You know, at first you just kind of got to put in your time. But then I started coming in at 10 o'clock and I'd work the first hour in a coffee shop or at home or something like that. And you get comments like, oh, hey, look, Nick, you're working banker's hours today. And I'm like, yeah, I'm doing that. Actually, I'm putting in about 5 hours today. I'm going to see if tomorrow I come in, I can do about 3. What do you think? What would you recommend to try to get 3? And completely like disarm that, because they're expecting you to get defensive. They're expecting you to like say something to justify where you've been. I never did that. I had the advantage where I was responsible. So I was in supply chain. So I had to go out and kind of see where the origin and destination were, how those were doing, like, you know, the process of the origin and destination. So, and we were responsible for, you know, getting it between point A and point B, as supply chain is, and everything in between that. And so I was able to go out to different sites periodically. And I got to the point where the culture when I took the job was that heads down, you're at your desk 9 hours, 10 hours a day, and you know, whatever you're talking over with low walls in the cubicles because they wanted better interaction, which I thought was complete bull. And ridiculous, like a call center, man. It was nuts, like stock trading or something. And I deliberately butted the system. So even when I was in the office, I was finding a conference room to hide in. I was finding somebody else's office to, and I say hide, I mean, but look, I was working, but I was just out of that environment because I wanted everyone to know that Nick Snapp does not work well in a cubicle environment. That was the message, but he's killing it for us. Look what he's doing.
Yeah.
Right. So like every time somebody asks me like, where you been? Like, oh, I focus better when I'm in a conference room or I was down in the lobby. So, you know, I had my headphones on.
You're coming across as like the Fonz here. It's like, hey, I do my own thing. I assume coworkers probably got their feathers rustled by you doing this, but you didn't care as much about that as much as maybe who you reported to and proving to them that you were doing the work and that you were killing it. I know when you entered into the position, you had stuff set up, you told them you're going to get the best out of me. What kind of ongoing conversations did you have to like continue to say, hey, I'm not going to be here. I'm going to be out of the office, but I'm still going to be getting it all done. Like what kind of negotiations with that culture and that and the management did you have so that they understood and put trust in you?
Well, there's a couple things I can tell you about. Well, the first is there wasn't a negotiation because I would ask for forgiveness rather than permission. So if I took it too far and I got called out on something, then I would ask that person who was calling me out to justify why it was a problem. And I'd get very curious. I would do it in like an offensive way, or I wouldn't be attacking their. I just get very, very curious. Mm-hmm. And as a coach that I am now, it's the same kind of thing that I do when people are doing things a certain way. Just start asking questions, try to get to the root of what's going on. And it's not very hard. I'm trying to figure out off the cuff an example of something like this. It's not very hard to get to the root of why people are concerned. And then as an engineer problem solving type person, it's like, okay, we'll just solve the problem. Well, I'm not going to like look at it from the angle that you're looking at. I'm going to go ahead and just figure out what it is you're concerned about. So the interview that I had was with a particular supervisor and he retired and I got another supervisor who had the reputation of being a micromanager, but I was already killing it. So I was in the job for, I think at this point, I told him I'd give him 2 years, Eric, but I gave him four. So I was in the job for a year and a half, maybe 2 years when this came to be. And I got a promotion. I was all of a sudden, I had seven people under me and I was getting a new boss. So I was on my day off. I got a call that I was getting a new supervisor and I came in the next day. I was supposed to take like 3 days off. I came in the next day, set up a 15-minute meeting with my new supervisor out, not in the office, not in his office, neutral territory in the lobby outside. It was a nice building. They had that luxury. And it's a kind of a negotiation thing too. If you know anything about negotiations, like you don't make a neutral ground. So sat down and said, look, I want to understand in detail your goals for this department. Well, there's very few managers that have the discipline to actually know what the goals for the department are and that can actually communicate them effectively that I've found in my experience in corporate. I've worked for a lot of different people. There's typically it's like a company mission statement or like they'll reiterate that. But when to really get to the bottom of what they want to do to make this department thrive, it's tough for them to come up with an answer. So when you ask those kind of questions, a lot of times the answers are off the cuff and easy to find ways that you can support them. So my first and foremost is like company first, right? Like what I said, it's not about you, it's about the company. So you ask, well, what's the goals for the department? And then reiterating those goals and how you can best support those particular initiatives. So I remember that it was like a big safety initiative when I was working for this particular company, and they want to make sure that all the carriers were safety, their safety record was meeting according to standards, that they had non-risk systems in place and all that kind of stuff, because if there's an incident, then a lot of times those incidents were on the record of the supply chain, and that wasn't a good thing. It looks bad. I mean, it affects people's paychecks and all that kind of stuff when you have bad safety ratings. Right. So I was like, oh, that's awesome. I'm completely on board with that. So what that's going to require me to do is be on site more, really get an in-depth understanding of what the processes are of the different contractors, how's their equipment laid out, you know, diving into what can we do to make this the most safe, document it, you know, that kind of stuff, which would, what, Eric, take me off site more, right? So I just, through those sort of ideas and aligning the goals of the company, and then with how your work environment is structured, and then just being very blatant, honest, like, look, I told this guy, I'm like, here's me. I'm in this cubicle because that's where my workspace is, but you will rarely see me in this cubicle because I don't work well there. So when I'm working, if you ever need to get a hold of me, you can send me a text and you can call me. I will answer it immediately. I'm there for you. I got your back, right? But if you expect me to be in the cubicle, let's just make the agreement that it's not going to be the best work environment for me. Are you okay with that? Yeah. And just getting that, even if they said that they're not okay with it and asking why, you know, the kind of stuff we talked earlier with the negotiations. But the thing is, this guy that was coming in, I already had a good reputation with him because I was killing it in the office. I was doing like you were doing, man. I mean, you're top of the not the food chain, but you're top performer in your area, and you have the ability to get away with more than other people might get away with because you're adding value and you're communicating the value, and they know what you bring to the table. They don't want to lose you. So they want, if you're that kind of performer, that's what it takes to hack corporate. You've got to be that kind of performer. You can't be a slough off.
Yeah.
You expect to be able to wipe your desk.
And it needs to not be, again, it's not about you. It's about delivering value. And so if it's all about you, and it's all about you hacking the system so that you can then, you know, show up and Ferris Bueller your way through the day.
Yeah.
That's not what it's about, man.
That's not. You shouldn't be working there. That's the case. If you just, I mean.
Exactly.
You got to have a job that's more aligned with your skill set.
So speaking of which, then the flip side of this, which we don't have a ton of time for, but you and I then both stopped working in those environments and started working at our homes. And that can be a huge culture shock because now it's a culture of one.
And
your boss is amazing and a jerk at the same time.
Dude, I got a quick story about that one. I don't have a lot of time to go into it. They didn't get on the email thing, but for this particular story. So I developed a 40-page business plan, the corporate person that I was, 40-page business plan to go out and do my own thing, do these studies for different companies and who I was going to reach out to and forecasting what revenue was going to look like and blah, blah, blah. And that 40-page outline, when I was in corporate, man, it was autopilot. I knew exactly what I needed to do, how to do it, how to communicate it, how to align my team. And when I became an entrepreneur, day one, I woke up completely excited. I knew what I needed to get done, but I didn't. I just sat there. I was frozen, man. I looked at my computer and just like, well, what do I do now? Like it was this weird, just paralyzation that I had. And it was because I didn't, if I was going to go back and do it again, I really would have thought about things I think about now that I'm in the productivity space. What's the routine? You know, how do I plan my day in advance? How do I know what's important? Like weeding through all the nuances with productivity that as a project manager, yeah, I was productive, but I was productive in corporate. As an entrepreneur, the biggest difference, man, is you are now your own accountability. So you've got to be very, very creative of how you're going to hold yourself accountable. And that's something I had no idea how to implement at the time. And now there's all kinds of strategies that I use to hold myself accountable. But man, when it's just you and you're just trying to will your way through these things you want to get done, you can waste a ton of time.
Yeah. Well, not even that, but on top of that, you've got the idea that, you know, you've got this whole environment and your quote unquote coworkers are now your family. And so you got to wait for, if you didn't like working in the cubicle before, now the workspace is this set space inside your home or you do have to get out of the house and get to that coffee shop or that conference room or that coworking space or something. And I've had different phases where different things work best for me, different days of the week, different times of the day. It's a big shift to, and again, there's the now more than back when I was in corporate, you have the ability to take your laptop and your cell phone and make video calls, audio calls, typing, video content, social media, all the different work that you could do. For the most part, you can do anywhere, including home. At times you shouldn't be doing it. So the boundaries and the lines, they all get blurred.
They do, man. And then one of the things I learned the hard way was this concept of agreements versus expectations. So powerful, such a powerful concept that with as supportive as my wife was and is of me going off and doing my own thing, there's a difference between entrepreneurship and being an employee. There just is. You put in your hours and you come home and you don't think about it. Well, when you're at home, there can be, not for everybody, I'm not sure if you experienced it or not, but hey, look, Nick's at home. So why wouldn't he be able to take the kids to the doctor or run to the school real quick to go drop something off or the project that whatever things that come up, errands that need to be run, quick shop, stops at the grocery store, like all this stuff. It's like, you know, he's just at home. I mean, of course he's being productive. He's got the whole day. He's nobody on his back, whatever. But if you're not crystal clear and understand like what's the best way for you to work at home, then that sort of stuff creeps in. The days that she had off, barging into the office and interrupting, like things like that, you just don't think about and you've got to talk about. So one of the best things I've done, and we're running out of time, is this the weekly review. Like what events, what things need to be done mutually. We both pull up our laptops. We don't share calendars because she doesn't like looking at mine. I don't really necessarily care about hers either. Right. So we both pull up our laptops. We look at all these different events. And the way I judge it, whether it's necessary to talk about it or not, is this event going to cause an argument if I spring it on her? So like some evening event with the Tampa Bay business owners or a strategy session that I had to have with like an employee that only had between the hours of 8 and 9 p.m. or an all-day event where like my mother-in-law comes over and typically I'm available to take the kids to school. If I can't take kids to school for some reason, then there's some things need to change. So working through all that stuff, and I kid you not, man, every single week there are at least four events that would have just blown up into an argument. And it's not just because my wife's a fiery Puerto Rican. It's not. It's more to it than that. So going through that exercise, even if you're an employee, is hugely valuable, just doing that every week. So we do it over lunch. And at night times don't work. She's tired, I'm tired. But lunch is a really, really good time to do that.
That's a good call. And again, it's all about that expectation and what was the other word?
Agreement.
Agreement. There you go. Nick, Nick, we're at the top of the time that we have to go, and this stinks, but people can go catch you on your show, so that's awesome. Let's tell everybody how to get to what you're doing.
Yeah, well, my show is called the Make It Snappy Productivity Show. If you're interested in the podcast, you just go to makeitsnappyshow.com/podcast. And my website for my coaching practice, I'm a productivity coach, and really I help business owners and entrepreneurs really understand their business intimately and dive into their systems and processes and help them get more efficient through this technical Lean Six Sigma, lean thinking approach that I take to help them get more done, make more money in less time. That's what I do. So if you're interested in that kind of thing, then you can go to nicksnap.com with two P's. Everything snap with me, man. Just the way it is.
Nice. Nick, it's been awesome talking with you. Thanks for being on the show. And I am sure you will be back again.
Great, man. It's been a pleasure, Eric. Always a really good time talking.
I hope that you got something out of that and the wheels are turning in terms of how to hack your corporate job or hack your home life, remote working job. Whether you are the boss of you or you are someone else's employee but work remotely, there's way more that we could cover with this. In fact, let's start a conversation. Head on over to beyondthetodolist.com/156, where the show notes are for this episode, and leave your comment and question for me and Nick. Thanks again to Nick for stopping by on this episode. Thank you again to Aweber for supporting this episode of Beyond the To-Do List. Again, make sure to go grab those free videos and downloadable checklists to get started and master that next step in your digital marketing workflow. If you're at the beginning of that, if you've already done some digital marketing but need to learn about some of the other aspects that you are not familiar with, this landing page, again, has free resources in terms of downloadable checklists and videos from Aweber that are going to get you started and to the next level. Go over to aweber.com/todo. That's aweber.com/todo. Grab those resources. Get started and move forward. Thanks again for listening. I'll see you next episode.
Beyond the To-Do List is a proud member of the Noodle Mix Network. Find more of our award-winning and award-nominated podcasts to make you think, laugh, and succeed at noodle.mx.